Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello. Yes, welcome to another Tech Talk. It is I, Stephen Scott. I've got Robin Christofferson here as well. Hello, Robin.
It is me, Robin Christofferson. Hi, guys.
We have confirmed it is you. Excellent. That's it. You held your pass in at the door to prove it was you. Right, look, we've got lots to get through this week. I am so pleased to see Andy. Well, I say that. That's what it says here. So pleased to see Andy.
No, you are pleased.
Of course I am.
Don't hide behind the lies, Stephen.
Don't hide behind the fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, tons of emails.
Yes, we have got tons of emails. A lot of emails to get through because being off for a week, a couple of weeks back on the show, we didn't get a chance to get to emails then. And then last week, Robin, we did a very busy show. Abby James was just fantastic on last week's show, talking all about education and all of the wonderful stuff that's going on in terms of, you know, like apps you can download. If you haven't heard that show yet, go back and listen to it. It's on the Tech Talk podcast, which you can search for online. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk if you're not already subscribed and listening, which I hope you are. But yes, go back and check that episode out. But we will get to the email inbox today. Plus, we're in the kitchen with Sheila Armstrong today. Sheila got in touch because she wants to tell us all about the Cobalt Talking Microwave. Now, Robin, it is a rite of passage as a blind person to have, well, a white cane, even if you don't use it. It could be a symbol cane. Also, a liquid level indicator. And if you're feeling flush in life, then you buy yourself a talking microwave. Have you got one?
Yeah, everyone has the Cobalt Talking Microwave, don't they? Mine's not a posh one, though. Mine doesn't have a grill thingy-bob as well.
Yeah, she'll look at the grill. Can I tell you a story? Right, I got the one that's got the grill by accident. Because I ordered it without the grill. They sent me the one with the grill. Obviously, I told them of the error immediately. Moving on. But we're going to talk about that today. And Ask Tech Talk is our brand new feature as well. We're going to be joined by the Technology for Life team's Ben Rendell from RNIB. He is going to be telling us the answer to Gordon's question, which is all about AirPods. Now, you love your AirPods, Robin.
I do. Honestly, they are my favourite piece of tech. They really are.
And you kind of convinced me, if I'm honest. I wasn't going to go and spend money on them, and I had to tell my wife, look, this is all Robin Christofferson's fault, because I was planning not to buy the new AirPods when they came out, because I thought, oh, I don't need these. I don't need them. But then I was starting to notice the battery lag, and to be honest, and you know, the issues with battery after a while that just don't run so well and don't last as long. And then that kind of gave me the idea to think, do you know what, Robin says they're really good, the battery lasts a lot longer, the H-E-Y Siri thing, you know, where you say that word or those words, and then suddenly, you know, you can talk to your phone. I think they're really good. So I bought a pair and I love them.
But do you know how to bring her round? Buy her some too.
What?
Then she'll be...
Oh, my wife. I thought you meant Siri.
Oh,
right. Okay. Sorry.
I got what you were on about, Robin. I understand.
Yeah. Don't pretend. such a suck up, isn't it? I did actually. I bought my wife the original pair way back, and yes, I think I've got it sussed that for Christmas this year. Hope she's not listening, but I think for Christmas this year that might be a present that Santa Claus might bring. Just saying. So anyway, look, lots to talk about. Let's get to the emails because honestly, we have got so many emails. It's time to read them.
We get email.
Yes, we do.
We get your email every day.
Every single day.
Here's your mail today.
Right, Andy, get to the inbox.
Hi, Stephen and Robin. This is from Alan. Just getting in touch with you to give you some comments.
Uh-oh.
Microsoft have done another webinar on the latest Narrator features. The webinar was released on the 19th of June. Microsoft did a good webinar on the new look Office ribbon. Which was only going to be online, but eventually Microsoft said that the new look Office ribbon will be on the desktop as well. Now, you did a feature on smart meters with the talking displays. Can you describe the size and layout of the display and the position of the buttons? Would you need two displays if you have one meter in your house or your flat and another meter outside? And do the meters connect with the smart meters by Bluetooth? Yeah, I hope that in the future that talking displays will be integrated into the smart meters themselves. Another issue that I do not like is I get a lot of emails in HTML format. And these read out the numbers of rows and columns, which is annoying. I also get this layout when I open Microsoft Outlook. There was mention that, with the new Narrator, the tables were not going to announce the number of rows and columns. I hope the Narrator will stop reading out all of these HTML layout tables, etc. Keep up the good work that you and Robin are doing for the blind and visually impaired people. Kind regards from Alan McGee.
I salute you, sir. Thank you for
thanks.
That. Do you want to take the one about HTML and tables first?
Yeah, absolutely. So he's absolutely right. On the newer version of Narrator that came with 1903, the latest Windows 10 update, it is a lot smarter, but by default, it does still announce row and column cell coordinates as you move around in a table. And he's right, a lot of emails are in HTML format, and you will get that by default. So what you need to do is to go to the Narrator control panel, the settings thing with control, Windows key, and enter. That's how you launch Narrator and you'll get taken straight to that. Then if you tab to a setting which is called change the level of detail that Narrator provides for text and controls, and there's a pop-up there, and it's set at all control details by default. That's the default setting. If you say change that to some, or even text only, so those are the other two options, then what will happen when you open up an HTML email is that it will say table of 5 columns and 12 rows or something. So it will say it the first time you open up the email, but from then on, as you arrow around inside the email to read it, it won't tell you as the coordinates of each cell changes. So yes, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, what they've done with Narrator, it seems, is add a lot more options. So the key thing is to make sure you're running Windows 10 with the very latest version. Now, of course, there are some issues with that because you don't get the latest version of Windows automatically in some cases. It will sometimes be rolled out over a period of time. So that's something to be aware of. Now, Sean Preece, who is a regular on the show and, of course, used to be on the show every week along with us, he told me that you do this thing where you go into the command, I think it's CMD. Mm-hmm. You type, or you hold down, I should say, you hold down or press the Windows key and then you type in CMD and then hit enter and then type in
Windows key and R. Or to bring up the run dialog and then type CMD and enter, yep. And that will bring to the DOS prompt, as it were.
Yep. And that'll tell you what version you're on.
Yep.
So that's good as well. So that tells you. And the version you're looking for is 1903. That's where we are at the moment. So if you get 1903 out of the babble of noise that comes out of your computer when you start going through all the information, then that is right. That's going to give you the very latest version of Narrator where all of those features are. I've got to say, I'm really impressed with a lot of the features in Narrator, and also Magnifier getting some updates soon. We mentioned it last week. You know, they're going to get that reading function soon as well, hopefully in the next few months. So, yeah, some really good stuff going on. Now, remind me, Andy, what else were some of the points that Alan brought up? Because I want to make sure we cover
Alan, yes. So you've covered the email. He's talked about the new look Office ribbon.
Yeah, that's the webinars. I mean, check those out. I think those webinars are brilliant. Microsoft doing those sort of 101s, just going through what is, you know, what's new in Narrator, what's new in Magnifier, and even being able to go through Office as well. I'll be honest, I'm using Office on the iPad at the moment, and I'm finding it a little bit clunky. I think there's still a lot of work to be done in making those apps accessible, which kind of seems odd, you know, that those apps would be, you know, feeling a bit inaccessible considering how new they are. You know, Microsoft Word the other day, just I could not get to grips with it at all. I ended up having to use Pages on the iPad instead, which is far more accessible. So, you know, it's just, I don't know, there's still a lot of issues. I think ultimately with an iPad especially, it might be different on a phone. Robin, you'll know better than me. But I think on a phone, these apps are actually not too bad. I think when you get to the iPad, there is so much jumping around you've got to do to get focus on what it is you're trying to get focus on that it creates more of a problem. But I don't know what you think.
Well, controversial I'm going to be here. I think I've talked about this in the past. When it comes to iOS, I like a small screen. I really find myself disoriented and at sea on an iPad-sized screen. So I totally agree with you there. I must say, though, that for all the praise we give to Microsoft, it isn't as accessible on iOS as Pages is, for example. Mm. Neither is it on macOS.
No.
One reason why I have to run a VM on my work machine to actually have Windows running as well. I do favour a Mac, but you've got to have Windows there for Office. So yeah, the Mac version of Office is not there yet either. So let's hope that things do improve. And obviously in iOS 13, there are many, many more keystroke, you know, Bluetooth keyboard hotkeys to drive the operating system and Apple's own built-in apps. So let's hope that Microsoft and other third-party developers kind of follow the lead there and hotkey everything just like they do on Windows desktop apps, for example. And that, I think, would certainly help that kind of feeling of being at sixes and sevens on a bigger screen.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the keyboard commands, because I have put iOS 13, the public beta, which I think we're up to public beta 6 now, on iOS 13, and that is, or iPadOS actually, as it's really called, because that's what I've put it on. I've put it on my iPad Pro just to try it out. I'm looking to see if I can use the iPad Pro as a MacBook replacement. For the kind of things I'm doing, which is documents, maybe some website work, I mean, things like, you know, I use WordPress, and I think WordPress is the best experience I have when WordPress is on the iPad or on the iPhone. Much better than trying to use that Project Gutenberg editor that's on the website end. It's just awful to use. So I really like that feature. I like that. I like using iMessage, FaceTime, you know, all my email apps, all the rest of it. So, you know, all that stuff is really good. And downloading this new beta version, so getting a chance to look ahead to what will be coming out soon for everybody who downloads iOS 13 or iPadOS 13 in the coming weeks, I've got to say I'm really impressed with a lot of the new functionality. And I think they really have sorted out, and Apple I'm talking about here, have really sorted out the focus problem that the iPad had. For example, say you're in Mail. Now, to sort of visualize this for a blind audience is very difficult, but the way I describe everything on the iPhone is like it's a big list. You just swipe left to right all the way through, and that is a list item. So everything on the screen, doesn't matter where it actually sits on the screen, it's essentially you're listening to a list. But on an iPad, it's different because you've actually got maybe three lists. You might have, for example, your inbox on one side. Then down the middle column, you've got the list of the emails. And then on the right-hand side, you've got a preview pane, which has got all the information from that email in there. So it's very hard to navigate around. And that was my biggest issue with the iPad for a long time. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, they seem to have fixed that. And just by a few simple commands, it is easier to navigate around inboxes and through websites. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. But I think I may be getting there to the point where the iPad may well be my laptop replacement. But I'll be talking more about that in the coming weeks, for sure.
And speaking of iOS 13, I had a bit of an epiphany this week because I too have got the beta on my phone. Mm. And I found a way of all but bringing back the tactile keyboard that people loved so much before.
Really?
Touchscreen. Yeah, kind of. But it's spooky. And I'll do a piece on it next week. I don't want to take up time here, but yeah, that's a little tease there. Honestly,
have you developed
amazing.
A whole new phone?
I'm not going to say any more. Tune in next week.
You've just built a BlackBerry. That's what you've done. You just built a BlackBerry phone.
It's something new in iOS 13.
Interesting. Right. Okay. Well, we'll talk more about that. Let's get
there
to another email.
Something else that Alan mentioned.
All right. Okay.
He was after information about the smart meters we're talking displays.
Oh yes.
That's
yes.
The other thing.
I'm going to say I know we did see you and I actually. In fact, I think three of us did actually when we were at TechShare Pro.
We did
last year. We did actually get a chance to get our hands on these. They're kind of. There's been a change, I believe, to the look of these, so we haven't seen the final product. And also, I'll be honest, and anyone who's been trying to get one of these for their home seems to still be having problems getting the energy companies to realise they even exist. We've got an email on that coming up. But the actual device itself is fairly dumb in the sense that it's got some information on it. It just sits there. There are buttons on it which will let, you know, speak. I think there's just one button, really, to get information out of it. There's a kind of speak button, if you like. There is a volume up and down button. It's very simple, very, very simple. How it connects to the hub, I'll be honest, it's all a bit mysterious because I thought it was through the internet. And we found out a couple of months back, if you remember, that that wasn't the case, that it couldn't be updated, for example. Once you get it, that's it. So it must be some kind of Bluetooth connection that operates between it and its hub.
Yeah, no, I actually heard a podcast this week which shed a bit of light on it. It uses a protocol called Zigbee. Zigbee is one of the many connected home kind of wireless protocols that have yet to be sort of standardized. But Zigbee is more powerful than Bluetooth. It's a proprietary kind of Wi-Fi protocol. So in theory, if you had 1 meter under the stairs, for example, another one quite close outside, depending on how thick your walls are, they might both be fine to communicate with the in-home display, or it might not. So
yeah, we need to be really clear on this, because this is the bit I think that confuses people. The smart home meter is one thing. I don't think it's the display that's accessible. Yep. So the display is separate. It's a wireless device that would sit in your living room on the table. The actual devices that connect to your meter that send the information off to the electricity companies, that's a separate thing. You don't bother with that. Yep. The installer will put that in. It's the display. They call it the accessible in-home display. That's the bit you're interested in. You would only generally have one of those, and it just sits in your living room. You've just had one installed.
I have, yeah, and I can say it isn't accessible.
Well, yours is, no, and that's the thing, yeah. But the standard ones aren't.
No, not in any way, so you will need to go and get these special ones, because
which is silly in itself.
Which is, yeah, very silly, yeah. But
and as you mentioned, Stephen, it's not very, it's a dumb thing. It can talk with those meters, but it's not got an internet connection. It's not got real, in quotes, Wi-Fi in it. So, yeah, it can't be updated. It just does what it does, and hopefully it does it well.
The only bit of audible noise from it is a beep. And
great.
That's not going to help at all. Brilliant. So you can know it's on and then when it's off, but that's it.
So I know I'm burning electricity.
Yeah.
Just don't know how much.
I know how much it costs me to have a shower, you know, because it tells me how much it is before I get in the shower. And then when I get out, it's gone up slightly.
Okay, so what we have to do is once we've all got our meters,
yes,
we've all got to have a competition to see how much does it cost for us to have a shower. I bet I lose because as for being the most expensive.
The dirtiest. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I take a long time in a shower.
Right.
Just saying. I'm just putting it out there. Not that anyone cares. Right.
More emails.
Yes, please. Yeah. Let's move on quick.
Hi, my name is Graham and I live in Ontario, Canada.
Oh.
And I have a Victor Reader Stream.
Hurrah!
And I use the Seller Library to provide Daisy books, which can be directly downloaded to the Victor Reader Stream. Ironically, many of the books were produced by the RNIB in addition to those produced by the CNIB. I find it very odd that you cannot get Daisy books directly onto the Victor Reader Stream in the UK. Maybe the RNIB should amalgamate with the Seller Library. That's from Graham.
Well, that comes at an interesting time. I did mention to you we were hoping to speak to Alison Long from RNIB on this week's show. It will, in fact, be on next week's show because the time that we arranged for the interview was actually going to be after broadcast. So we are going to be speaking to Alison this week. She'll be on the show next week. So I would encourage you to listen to that, because I think you might get some of the answers to, maybe not for Graham essentially, because he's got the problem solved in Canada, but I think other people in the UK who are saying, you know, where are all these books we could get access to? Well, just keep listening and we'll hopefully have some answers to, especially to those of you out there who are critical of RNIB Overdrive, like me. Right, okay. What else?
Sticking with the Victor Reader Stream, this email is from Penny. She says, hi, I'm thinking of buying a Victor Reader Stream for my husband. How compatible is it with a Mac? Now, we do not have Windows on our PC. Thank you very much. That's from Penny.
Well, first of all, Penny, you're a very smart person, clearly. You've obviously avoided PCs. That makes a lot of sense to me. But the Victor Reader Stream doesn't actually need a computer in some respects. The only reason you would need a computer is if you want to transfer certain things, like at the moment, RNIB Talking Books, to it. You'd have to connect you'd have to take the SD card out of the Victor Reader and put it into your computer. Now, the only question I have, and before I left the house this morning, I wanted to check this on my own MacBook, but I didn't get a chance to do it. So I might have a better answer for you next week on this, or maybe one of our listeners will. But my thought on this is, you know, I've had issues before when you format a an SD card on a PC. The Mac, for example, will read. You know, you can put the card in and it will show up, but you can't copy anything to that particular SD card or even USB drive or whatever. So that might be a problem. But there are other ways to get content onto the Victor Reader Stream, and there's a lovely little cable, which I'm fascinated by, right? It's inside the box. I had no idea what it was for. What you do is you plug the USB stick. So I get a lot of RNIB talking books, right, through RNIB USB sticks, right? So a little USB stick comes in the envelope. You take it out, and you plug the USB stick into one end of the cable, and then the other end of the cable goes into the Victor Reader, and you just copy the book right in. So you don't even need a computer. And that's another way to do it. Now, Robin's thinking, and I know what Robin's thinking. He's sitting there thinking, why would you bother with any of this? Well, you can just get a phone.
Fake
but
news.
For those who want it, for
I'm
those who want
Sean
it.
There.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I think this, you know, for those who are interested in buying this kind of thing, and it is a brilliant piece of kit for sure, there are ways to do it. So you don't always need the computer. There are ways around it. I will check that for next week, though, for you, Penny, because I am intrigued by that one myself. Would it work on a Mac as an SD card? I guess you could probably still connect the device. Yeah, we'll get answers on that.
Yeah, so I'm not going to do very well here because I know that there is a format that will support both Macs and Windows, and yeah. It's either FAT32 or NTFS, and I can't remember which one.
I think it's NTFS because there. The FAT32 is generally, and I think on a human where a Victor Reader, you've got to use FAT32 as the format option. I think if you choose NTFS, it won't work. So, yeah, we'll have to check that one out and get back to you on that one, Penny.
There's more on the Victor Reader Stream.
Of course there is. Everyone loves it.
This one is from Stephanie. Hi, I was listening to your last program, and I thought I'd let you know that it's easier to get audible books onto the Victor Reader Stream than you were suggesting. Yes, you need to download Audible Manager and activate your player, but after that you can bypass Audible Manager. It places an Audible folder on your computer, probably into the My Documents folder. Now, inside this folder, there is a download folder. And when you download a book from the website, it places a file into this folder. Now, then you need to copy and paste the file onto the Audible folder into your Victor Reader SD card. I use this method for reading Audible books using the Victor Reader for many, many years. I forgot Audible Manager even existed. That was, of course, until the iPhone came along and made the process ridiculously easy. I hope this helps. That's from Steph, who is allegedly Robin's sister.
Oh, really, Robin?
I was just thinking how pleasant and intelligent she sounded. Right at the end there was a little, did you notice that about
You're trying to get the good spot at the Christmas table, aren't you, for this year? Yeah, quite right. That is good to know,
good
actually, that you can do it that way. Because I'll be honest, that process of getting books from Audible onto the Victor Reader was a bit arduous. Especially in the setup, and a lot of the process didn't seem very accessible. So I would worry for someone who was totally blind with no one around trying to follow this instruction. It's quite complicated, really, and probably more so than it needs to be. It would actually be easier, believe it or not, to just get a smartphone and learn how it worked. But then I say that as a smartphone user, maybe not the case for everyone. There is another email in this, because other people have picked up on this, Andy, haven't they?
There's one here from Nadia, who says, "Hi guys, I've missed the last couple of episodes, and I've been playing catch-up. I was just listening to your Sky Q episode. Thanks for reading out my email. I just wanted to say that there was a way of putting Audible books onto your stream without using Audible Download Manager. You need to make sure Audible Manager is open when you connect your player for the very first time to your laptop or whatever computer you're using so that the device can be activated. But after that, if you have all of your Audible books stored on your computer's hard drive, you can simply go to the folder and copy the books across into the Audible folder on the stream's SD card. It's still a little time consuming, but I've been doing it for years and I haven't used Audible Manager to directly transfer a book to my player even once. I hope that helps, Stephen. I hate your experience to put you off using the stream."
Oh, you won't put me off. You will not put me off using the stream. I'm loving using it for all the functions, podcasts, the whole lot. Okay, well, look, we'll leave it there because we've got so many more emails to get through. But we want to shift focus now to the kitchen. And Sheila Armstrong, who's a regular on our station from the Torch Trust, got in touch with us to share her thoughts on the Cobalt Talking Microwave.
Well, I'm standing in front of my Cobalt Combi Microwave Oven, so it can do microwave or conventional. It's an average sized microwave, but it doesn't have a display. I think that's a bit of a disadvantage, really, because if you're in a family with blind and sighted people don't like it when they haven't got a screen, do they? Anyway, it doesn't have a display, but it does talk all of its functions. So the top left one, I'll just press it.
7:07 p.m.
has given us the time. The top right one.
Timer only.
Now that one is if you want to set the timer, so I'll just cancel that because I don't want to do that at the moment. The next two are various things that you can do with the microwave.
High power microwave.
So this is the second one down on the left, and you can select medium.
High power. Medium, low power microwave.
That's equivalent of what we normally call defrost.
Low power microwave.
That's it.
High power microwave.
Back to high power. Low power is just 10%, so you don't use that all that often. I'll cancel that.
Cancel.
The cancel is the bottom left, by the way. Then we come on to other ones. There's the grill.
Grill.
I'll cancel that.
Start.
Oops.
Pause. Press again to cancel. Cancel.
So as you can see, I made an error there. I slipped down to the bottom right one, which was start. But I knew that if I pressed the left-hand one opposite the start button, I would be able to cancel it. There's nothing actually in the microwave yet, so I certainly don't want it to start. So that was the grill. Then there's another one which I haven't actually used.
Combination medium, low power, microwave and grill.
Yeah, not sure what you would use that for. Probably to just heat something and then crisp it up a bit with the grill. The next one I do use a lot, but we're not going to use it today.
180 degrees C, convection.
So that's 180 degrees centigrade. And you could, if you press the start button, it would heat the conventional oven up to 180. And it would tell you when it was up to temperature. And then you should put in whatever you want to cook. And then you can set the time when it again goes up to temperature, because opening the door and putting in the stuff, especially if it's been in the fridge, puts the temperature down, and it doesn't let you actually set the timer until it's back up to temperature, which I guess is strictly correct. I mean, in ordinary conventional ovens, we usually just shove it in and set the time, but this doesn't let you do that. Now there's a line of three, and these are the auto-programmed keys.
Auto-defrost meat, 0.1 kilos.
So that was auto-defrost for meat, and as you maybe heard, it gives you the weight in kilos, but you can change it to pounds and ounces if you prefer.
Auto-defrost poultry, 0.1 kilos.
So that's the poultry.
Auto-defrost fish, 0.1 kilos.
So that's the auto-defrost.
Auto-defrost bread, 0.1 kilos.
And then there's bread.
Auto-defrost fruit, 0.1 kilos.
And there's fruit, frozen fruit.
Auto-defrost meat, 0.1 kilos.
We're back round to meat. So there are various things that you can defrost. So it just sets the time it thinks you need. I'm going to show you how to scale up the kilos when we come to do the meal. Now, the next one along is the one we're going to use.
Auto-cook jacket potato, 0.1 kilos.
And I'm going to take the potatoes and shove them on. Number one. I, of course, washed them and pricked them before starting the recording. What you can't do is rub them with salt, because unfortunately salt and microwaves don't go together.
Door closed.
So it told me that it was open, and it's told me that it's closed. Now, I have heard some people say that that really annoys them, but I've just got used to it. I never notice it now. So here we go. I'm going to press the thing for auto-cooked jacket potato. So it was the middle one of a line of three, but it is hard to remember them. And if you do press the wrong one, you can always cancel, or it'll just say incorrect key and you won't be able to do anything. So you can't really make a mistake.
Auto-cooked jacket potato, 0.1 kilos.
Right, 0.1 kilos. So I'm going to go down past a line of two, which are incorrect keys. I'll just...
Incorrect.
That's actually the more or less one, but it doesn't work in all situations. So down to the next line. Now, the next line is the usual line you'd use in microwaves if you want to select a time. But in, now that we've got this auto-cooked jacket potato going, it's going to be used to increment the kilograms. Now, on the left, you could change it to ounces, but we're going to stick on grams at the moment. So I'm going to press the middle one.
0.2 kilos, 0.3 kilos, 0.6 kilos.
Now I'm going to press the bottom right one, which is start. It's not quite as crispy as if you did it in a conventional oven, but on the other hand, you don't have to wait 60 or 70 minutes.
Start. Auto-cooked jacket potato, 0.6 kilos, 20 minutes, 10 seconds.
There we go. So I'm pretty sure it's just on microwave at the moment. It has a different sound when it goes to the combi oven. I just leave it. I've no idea what it does, to be honest, but it does it in the correct combinations of microwave and conventional oven. So there we go.
Might as well face it, I'm addicted to spuds. Might as well face it, I'm addicted to spuds.
I don't think we've ever used that in the radio before. Addicted to spuds. Fantastic. Thank you to Sheila there for showing off the Cobalt microwave oven and grill. You can just get the microwave as well. Get in touch with Cobalt. I think it's £225 is the going rate there. That's for one or the other, but you know, get in touch because they've always got sales on as well, so you never know, you might get a bit of a discount there.
I've only got one question after that fantastic demo. Why don't salt and microwaves get on?
I was kind of wondering that as well. I've never noticed this problem before. I don't take salt, so it's never really been an issue for me. But what happens with salt in the microwave? I kind of want to try it now. Destroy a microwave. I'll maybe try it in a different microwave. Maybe try it in my mother's rather than in mine. You know, because then it's not mine, and then who cares? Now, look, we're coming up. We've got Ask Tech Talk. We've been asking you to get in touch with your questions, no matter how silly you might think the question is. No question is too silly here. Hey, look, you'll have to listen to me to know that. But, you know, honestly, get in touch with your questions. If you've got something you'd like to ask our team at RNIB's Technology for Life team, then get in touch. We're going to be hearing Gordon's question today on AirPods. That's coming up. Ben Rendell from the organisation, from RNIB here, and the Technology for Life team is going to be answering Gordon's question on that. That is coming up here on Tech Talk. But first...
News from the internet!
Yeah, not a huge amount to talk about, but one big story that a lot of blind people are interested in, and that is Aira. Now, Aira is the service which is based out of the States. It's available in several countries, the US, Canada, also New Zealand and Australia as well. And this is a service which gives you access to an agent, essentially, someone who can help you in your daily life. Now, it's a service that costs money. You've got to pay for it. And in the States, it's very popular for people doing a whole wide range of different tasks, even if it's as simple as maybe walking to work and they've come up against a problem where they can't go their usual route. Someone on the other end can actually be there to assist and actually help you, guide you to wherever you're trying to get to. Maybe it's meeting someone in a crowd. They can help with that as well. And it's all done by you essentially giving over quite a bit of your data. For example, you might have an agent get into your Facebook account so they can actually see who it is you're trying to meet. Or it could be that, you know, they want to know your location. So there's lots of trust involved, but you are paying for it. It is essentially like a personal assistant service. And it's delivered in America through glasses. You actually wear a pair of glasses. There are different ones. I think the current range is called Horizon. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you wear these glasses. They've got a camera in them, and that camera is connected to your phone. And it will send that image to the IRA agent. So they essentially see where you're going. So if you can't see at all, you can wear these glasses and it will actually guide you. The amazing story that I was told once was of a guy who was totally blind running through an airport to catch his flight. The guy couldn't see a thing and he was running through the airport because he was being guided by the IRA agent. Now, I'll be honest with you, that is the one time you do not want your internet connection on your phone to go down. That could be a problem as he goes, you know, straight into a wall. That's not great. But it didn't happen in that case. And, you know, what's brilliant is he was able to do that independently. It does give a lot of independence to a lot of people, Robin. It's a service that I am very intrigued by. What's been your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. It's gone down very well in those countries that you mentioned. Those glasses are optional. So if you don't want to go to the expense of going for that option, then you can just sign up for the IRA service in those countries just by downloading the app and following the instructions. And you would just use the back-facing or potentially even front-facing camera.
Yeah.
And those trained agents really can do a lot of legwork for you. They could help you plan a journey as well as, you know, going on, traveling on that journey. They can do Google searches for you. They can look at LinkedIn profiles and get information about people that you're about to have a meeting with, etc. So, yeah, it's a really powerful service.
Yeah, that kind of research part was interesting. Someone I spotted on Twitter the other day was saying, you know, they had trouble finding something to buy online and they just couldn't get the information they were looking for. They were really struggling. So they said, we just got in touch with IRA and they were able to provide the information. You know, what the product was, all the information, almost doing the research for you.
And send them a link, yeah.
And send a link to you. And it's just so much easier. And I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, this brings up a big argument about dependence versus independence. I think they actually go together in some ways. I think we all need each other at some point. We all need some assistance in some points. And I don't think we should be critical of that. You can't do everything yourself, right?
I mean, no one need can. Assistance.
Well, from time to time. Even if you're fully sighted, it doesn't make, you know, Andy might be really good at a lot of things, but, you know, you're not a brain surgeon. So,
no.
You know, I'm not going to expect you to, you know, if I need a new brain tomorrow, and please don't argue that I do, but if, you know, you thought I needed a new brain all of a sudden, that you're going to just perform the operation
because I
kind
of my best
read
shot.
Something on Google.
I'll give it a go, Stephen. I mean, yeah. I can't promise.
Yeah. He's game.
Give it a try.
Yeah.
That's it. You can do anything these days.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we're none of us an island. We are all codependent.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the difference, people might be thinking, well, be my eyes. You know, that's a thing too. That's free. They're trained. And, you know, that really sets them apart. They're committed on those calls. They've got as much time as you can afford, or we're going to talk about the free minutes that you have in a moment.
Well, but, let's just talk about that, because that's the main story. So the big story this week is that the service has gone free. Now, when we say that, that comes with terms and conditions, all right? Because you get free five-minute calls during the day. Now, you can have, apparently, as many of these five-minute calls as you want. I don't know if that's true. Still, details are a bit sketchy on that, but there's been rumour kicking around that you can, if you called someone up, it's a bit like, do you remember the good old days with the old BT phones? It might be still the case, actually. You call, and then you maybe get 58 minutes into the call, you'd have to hang up and then dial back again so that you didn't, you know, incur a charge.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit like that, but 5 minutes is your max. Now, for some people, that might just be enough to quickly identify something. You know, does my socks match, or does this shirt go well with this, or, you know, can you find me some information online, or where am I? That kind of brief information, you know, is fine for the 5 minutes. If you go over the 5 minutes, you start paying. Now, that's all good and well if you're signed up and you're subscribed. However, the big problem for us in the UK is that they've just closed the trial. So there was a trial ongoing. Some people may not even realise this, but there was an ongoing trial by IRA, a pilot trial, to see how it was going to work here. Now, we don't know what the results of that pilot were. All we know is that the pilot stopped as of August 14th. And essentially, if you hadn't signed up, as you didn't, Robin, and I don't think I did either, we can't now sign up. So you and I are out of it. We can't sign up to use it. I think you were quite keen to try the 5 minutes a day.
Well, one point of clarification and potential confusion that people might have, if you have the IRA app or if you download it today, it's in the UK store, it asks you to register with an account with them. And It first asks you for your phone number, and the first field that you'll see is a pop-up for your country code. And I think by default it's on plus one, you know, the US one. And in the pop-up is UK still. So it'll, you tap on UK and it's plus 44, and then it asks you to put your phone number in. You put your mobile number in, and then it says the UK isn't supported. So after the 14th of August, they have yet to update the UK store version of the app to get rid of the UK option in the pop-up. So that was really confusing, because it was there as one of the, along with, like you said, Australia, New Zealand, the US and Canada, but it complained still after that. So yeah, please do remove that, Ira, just so that we're in no doubt that we're not yet eligible to sign up if you haven't already been part of that trial.
Yeah, so if you have got a subscription already, if you did sign up and you were using the service, you can still use it. It's only if you haven't signed up that you would not be able to do that. If you, you basically, you can't sign up if you're in the UK at the moment. So that is something that we hope will change. We hope there'll be some kind of announcement on that soon. And of course, we'll bring you what we hear on it in the coming weeks and months. I will say, though, Be My Eyes is a brilliant app and has served me well. And the volunteers on it get high praise from me. I've never had a bad experience yet. And I don't, I've never heard of one person who has. Nope. At least no one. You know, I follow a lot on Twitter from the team at Be My Eyes. Now, I don't expect Be My Eyes would retweet, you know, I had the worst experience in my life. But, you know, my experience seems to be they get a lot of people who are, you know, first-time users of it, people who've maybe used it or volunteered for the first time and have mentioned that they've enjoyed doing it. So, yeah, it does seem like a really nice community of people. And there are, you know, there's always someone available to answer. So, you know, there's always an option out there at least. But the only thing I would say is, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, just for anyone who's maybe hearing about Be My Eyes for the first time. It is a brilliant app. It does give you access to a volunteer who can be your eyes for as long as you need or as long as you can get from that person. But don't share any personal information. Don't show them bank statements. Don't ask them to read out your card number, because you don't know who you're dealing with. They are volunteers. They are not vetted in that way, unlike IRA agents that are vetted, you know. But again, just be careful. That's all I'm saying. Right, look, I want to get to our new feature, because this is really interesting. We've been asking people this week, last week actually, to get in touch and ask Tech Talk. It's our new feature here. We haven't got a jingle yet. We're working on that. I've got Andy sent off to the music class.
Andy can sing us one.
Yeah, yeah. I think he could sing it, yeah.
Oh, the big band are outside just now, and they'll come in and do a quick jingle.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we are not going to worry about jingles, but we are going to think about the new feature, because it's brilliant. Ask Tech Talk is the opportunity to ask questions that you might think, you know, maybe you're sitting there at home thinking, I've got a problem technology-wise, and I'm really nervous to ask. There is no question that is ridiculous here, trust me. And the Technology for Life team at RNIB, their function is to do this, to talk to you at any time about these issues. I mean, I say any time, it is working hours, 9 to 5. But, you know, at the same time, the team are there, they are available. Get in touch, and we'll give you the phone number. So, you know, get yourself a note taker ready, or, you know, whatever, however you take your notes. I'll give you the phone number so you can call the Technology for Life team for ongoing support, but and we want to highlight the work they do through this segment, but also to give you a chance to ask questions. And if we share those questions with others, then we all win, you know. So that's what this is all about. That's what this feature is all about. I will say we've had lots of questions already. In fact, so many we were thinking we may have to take over half the show with it. But we're going to start off with one this week, and we'll maybe increase that as we go along. We'll just see how this plays out. It all goes by your emails. So our first Ask Tech Talk this week, Andy, is from Gordon.
Yeah, this week's Ask Tech Talk question from Gordon says, as I use VoiceOver on my iPhone, I spend a lot of time wearing earphones so as to not annoy friends and family with the sound of my phone chattering away. I like the Apple earphones as much as the controller, and the mic allows me to answer calls, adjust volume and skip between music tracks, or even pause whatever podcast, audiobook or music track that I'm listening to. The problem is constantly getting the wires tangled up. Not being able to see, it often takes a while to disentangle them. I do have a set of Bluetooth earphones, but they are very inexpensive smart OMI, which, while they are fine for listening to audiobooks or podcasts, they produce a lot of lag time when browsing the web or on social media.
Typing when using these earphones is a trial, especially if I'm using the Bluetooth keyboard. I've been considering investing in a set of Apple AirPods, as I'm told that they have no lag and produce an excellent sound quality as far as earphones can. What I'd like to know is, do these AirPods allow me to answer calls, pause and resume playback and adjust volume just like my wired earphones do? In view of the cost of the AirPods, I'd hate to buy a set and then discover that I can't do all of the things I can do via the wired set. Thanks. That's from Gordon.
Okay, well, thank you for your question, Gordon. Ben Rendell from RNIB's Technology for Life team is here to answer your question.
Hi there, Gordon. Ben here from RNIB's Technology for Life team. In response to your question regarding the Apple AirPods, yes, you can use them to answer and end calls. You do this by double-tapping either of the AirPods. You can also use them to control play and pause, going to the next track, going to the previous track, or activating Siri. You set up the AirPods to do two of these things at a time. So I have mine set up so that my right AirPod, when I double tap it, either plays or pauses. And when I double tap my left AirPod, it activates Siri. So it doesn't have an inbuilt function for volume up and down. However, you can ask Siri to do this for you just by double tapping and saying volume up or volume down. You also don't have the issue with the lag with the latest AirPods. So when you're typing with VoiceOver, it's a lot easier. It also has a feature for detecting when you put the AirPods in your ears and when you take them out. So particularly if you've got both in and you take one out, it will automatically pause whatever you're listening to. And when you put it back in, it will automatically start playing again. So quite useful if you just need to quickly talk to someone or listen to something and then you just want to carry on without having to go back in and hitting play. I hope that answers your question. If you need any more information, feel free to get in touch with the Technology for Life team.
And if you have a question, no matter how big or small, you can ask the Technology for Life team at RNIB by calling the helpline on the number 0303 123 9999.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. Thank you for your question, Gordon. And thank you to Ben for answering as well. That's what we're doing here. We're putting all this together so that you've got access to the people who know the answers to these questions. There are lots and lots of fascinating questions coming through that I can't wait to get to in the coming weeks. Right, back to the emails, I think.
Email.
Yes.
We get email.
We do.
We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
And I believe there's some anger in the inbox this weekend.
Brace yourself, we're in trouble.
Okay, that's nothing unusual.
Hi team, this email's from Alan. Just finished listening to your episode on the 13th of August and my ire is up. In fact, I had to go for a wee walk to get my anger down before sending this email.
Oh, yeah.
Your demo of trying to book a flight to Barcelona was great and I hope you do more stuff like this. But I am angry at both of you and the companies concerned. It is important that you contact the companies as you did get their responses, but you left it to the listener to draw conclusions and you did not call out BA and Ryanair on the total inadequacy of their responses. And you might have given a little bit more kudos to EasyJet for their offering. Ryanair are so obviously sensitised to accessibility needs and requirements that they didn't even respond, and this certainly should have been pointed out more forcibly. As for BA, well, it was a typical corporate response that could only pay lip service to the app accessibility that was being challenged, and it did not apologise or indicate that it would be a priority, just some typical reassurance that something would be done sometime, someday. Just like a politician's response. There is no excuse in this day and age for the pathetic apps that British Airways and Ryanair have produced. Accessibility is a well-understood issue and enshrined in law in some respects. There should be no unlabeled buttons and inaccessible UI components, as these apps are being built with accessibility as an integral design consideration. British Airways have obviously built an app and then are trying to make it accessible after the event, a totally inappropriate development strategy. The developers of these apps, whether in-house or third-party, should be fired and replaced with developers who understand at least the basics of accessible requirements. We must stop companies getting away with producing apps like these, stop them using out-of-date development practices, and insist on using app developers that can evidence their understanding of good practice in creating accessible components. Your program, with its links to RNIB, is a platform that should be naming and shaming these companies. Accessibility barriers have been identified and understood for many years now, and instances of inaccessible content and bland company responses are no longer acceptable. These comments apply equally well to web page developers and the companies who approve the use of inaccessible web pages in their name. I am, myself, a software engineer, and we only get more accessible software by either ensuring accessibility is a mandatory skill for developers or castigating or prosecuting the companies who expose inaccessible content. In fact, we probably have to do both the tackling issue from both bottom up and top down. Another comment I have is that why are none of the companies who create inaccessible websites and phone apps not being prosecuted under equality legislation, perhaps a class action organised by RNIB? We need a big fight with a big company, not allowing companies to pick off individual complaints with trivial compensation or drawn-out communications. Keep up the good work, but let's hear some real criticism when flaws are found. That's from Alan.
Well, thank you, Alan. I think you've done that pretty well all by yourself in picking up on those points. And I think it's important that we all have our say on these things. I mean, clearly, there was a winner out of the app test that was done, and that is good. But of course, more can be done. And in fact, the good news is, Robin, that I believe British Airways has reached out and is working now, or will be working, with your organisation, AbilityNet, and possibly even RNIB in the future as well. So actually, some good news has come out of this, and they are keen to develop a new app.
Absolutely. So we're in active conversations with them. Ryanair still conspicuous with lack of any response.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that there is a place for one could easily get really angry and frustrated about the parlous state of some apps and many websites as well. Litigation is a challenging area. You only have to look at the States, and this week, Domino's Pizza,
yeah,
who were taken to court, actually pushed back, and it's actually gone through the ranks of the courts up to the Supreme Court in America. You know, lower courts didn't just throw it out and say, absolutely, you know, this is a valid complaint. You need to make sure your app and website are accessible to blind people. It's gone up through the courts, so it's not that cut and dried, even though the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, is very, one would think, very clear. So litigation over here as well is, it's not a cut and dried process. So in our experience at AbilityNet, a collaborative approach where we can work in tandem with organisations has much better results. So we would always favour an approach that doesn't potentially convey our full desperation or exasperation with a particular organisation. It's you get further by being a little bit more diplomatic about it. And I think that's what that was the sort of tone we struck last week. Anyone who listened to the piece could hear Addy's frustration and his pleasure with EasyJet.
Yeah, I mean, we could all sit and shout about terrible apps, and we have over time. You know, we've all had a moment where we get so frustrated by an app and we get fed up with it, and we're annoyed at the fact that we can't use it. We want to use that service, and it is absolutely disgraceful. There are so many times you can say that, that's the problem, and I felt it was appropriate last week for us to let Addy have his say on that, and he did. So, no, I do appreciate your comments, Alan. I think you're right in some respects. It is important that we continue to challenge, but it's finding the right balance, and like I say, some good news coming out of this with British Airways working with AbilityNet and RNIB down the line to actually help create a new app, not update the existing one. That is good news. So, you know, that's the kind of relationships we all want to build. That's the relationships I think RNIB and AbilityNet are very keen to develop, rather than taking it to court. Now, it's actually not the first time that RNIB has taken an organisation to court, but that is with involvement with the community at large. That's for all of us to get involved in. If that's something that the blind community genuinely thinks is a problem that we need to resolve, then we all have to get involved in that. We can't expect RNIB in and of itself, or AbilityNet in and of itself, or in the States, NFB or ACB or any of the other ones, to just go off and do it. That wouldn't be right. That's not what I would consider to be, you know, I don't want to use the word democratic because we're not that kind of organisation, but the point is that we as a community need to come together on this. And I agree there are certain things we should stamp our feet on. This one has actually yielded some results, which I am really proud of, the fact that this show has actually managed to do that, and AbilityNet and RNIB have worked together to get further results. So, you know, not just let's sit and talk about it and moan about it and see how terrible it is, but actually let's get in touch with these companies. And I laid out very clearly in an email to all three companies, you know, this is great, more can be done, or this is terrible, more needs to be done. You know, essentially, that was the responses the responses I sent over to them. They then came back with their responses. You know, I don't think anyone's ever happy with the first response. Truthfully, PR departments will be PR departments. That's the way it goes. But very interesting story nonetheless, and certainly a conversation we're going to continue here on the show. So if you've got an issue with an app or something, tell us about it. But, you know, also telling us tells RNIB. That's the way I look at it, because this is an RNIB program. It's on the RNIB channel. So, you know, people from RNIB are listening. But it is up to us as a community to drive this. No, it's not for anyone else. It's for us to do. And that's why this is so important. Look, we're almost out of time. I just want to quickly remind people of the ways to get in touch to ask Tech Talk. If you've got a question or query about a piece of technology, then get in touch. And it's the usual email address that you would email into, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is the email address. You can also send us a message on Twitter using the hashtag AskTechTalk, or drop us a message on Facebook as well. Get in touch with us, ask your question, or if you've got a general comment about the show, the email address is open to you at any time. Get in touch with us. Loads more emails, Andy, I believe, are there, but we didn't get to all of them today.
Yes, we need another hour, which we don't have, unfortunately.
Well, we do next week. That's the good news. Yeah. So we're back, usual place, same time next week. Robin, thank you as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
We'll catch you next time.